Of the Employee Benefits Committee to order. And as we became aware of these bills, we knew that they fell under our guidelines to approve, give a favorable, unfavorable, or no recommendation to. So with that, I'm going to ask Alec to call the roll.
Senators, Chairman Kressbach.
Present.
Dever.
Here.
Kilzer.
Here.
Nelson.
Here.
Oban.
Here.
Pullman.
Here.
Representatives Kreit.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Boehning.
Here.
Doctor. Gugisberg. Laning.
Here.
Schneider.
Here.
Madam Chair, you have a quorum.
We will then proceed to the next item on our agenda, and that's the consideration of our minutes from the October 26th meeting. And I'm sure you have all received those in the email. We have a motion for adoption and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carried. Then we'll move into the 805 item, and that is to hear comments on House Bill 1406. Mr. Collins, welcome to the morning committee.
Thank you, and good morning. What I'll do is just go over myself and Josh Johnson with Deloitte, who is our consultant, go over the technical comments that they prepared on the bill. And and attached here is their evaluation. And what we'll do maybe just to go through is just go to, if you can go to page 7, is we'll just go to the overall conclusions and observations that that Deloitte put together, and as well as PERS contributed to these observations as well. First of all, the bill as it stands today could have a material impact on the health plan, resulting in significant reductions in the plan design or requiring additional appropriations if the existing plan design is to be maintained. And we'll get into that in just a minute, the details of how that could happen on the bill. We also feel, it was mentioned that by changing the bidding patterns and things, let me start by going to the front maybe, just recap the bill a little bit before I get into the comments. The proposed bill would create a new section to our insurance code, mandating that the term of the Uniform Insurance Group insurance contract for hospital benefits coverage may not exceed 2 years, so it would set a 2-year time frame for our contracts, which incidentally is what we contract for today is 2 years, but we have these options to renew after. So, but this just points out that we would have to contract for 2 years. Which isn't different than what we do, and it changes the contracting period. The contracting period that we use today is the beginning of the biennium, July 1, starting like this for the next biennium, starting this July 1, and then it goes through June 30th, the end of the biennium. So it's synced up with the biennium as our contract period. What this bill suggests doing is changing that contracting period and moving it back. Instead of starting on July 1, we would start on January 1 and do 2 years from January 1 forward. And so it's suggesting changing the contracting period. And so those are the major provisions of the bill in those two areas. So going back the where we may have the change in the health insurance costs is the change that first observation comes about as a result of changing that contracting period. And I'll have Josh talk to you about how that would work. We also mentioned here, this is an observation from our attorney, that there could be some concerns with Article 18 of Article 1 of the North Dakota Constitution relating to impairment of contract, because there are some understandings in place right now as to how the contracting period works. Although this is just, I don't want to imply that there is. It's just our attorney brings it up that there's a possibility that there could be. Not that there is, but it's something to be aware of. The modified fully insured method, this we also point here, this bill has in there under the appropriations provision, a provision that we can only expend the money that is appropriated by the last legislative session. So in January, when we come around to doing bid and new contract, we would look back to what you have appropriated to determine what we could spend to buy a plan design. What that limits is, for example, if employees pay a part of the premium, that's not appropriated dollars. So now all of a sudden we'd be anticipating a plan design that would be funded 95% by the state and 5% by the employee, but when we buy it, we'd be limited to the 95% level. And I think that's just that. I think that's just a wording issue. I think it's unintended. It wasn't designed to be that way, but it's just something that's there. The other thing is we look at those because of the way that's worded, depending upon how it could be, if we have to look to the appropriation, you know, to the extent that reserves are used, those are not necessarily appropriated each time. So if it was anticipated that we would use reserves to buy down, it might not be part of the appropriation. We get out there, we board, we wouldn't be able to use that, so we'd have to make budget reductions from there. And again, I think that's just a wording issue. I don't think that's an intention of the bill. It's just a wording issue to be taken a look at. And then lastly, again, an unintended thing that could occur because of the way the appropriation wording is that if that appropriation that you make is supposed to be the maximum amount that we can spend during the biennium, you're one of our clients. And if that all of a sudden becomes the max, how do we deal with retirees? We get money in from retirees, that's not appropriated. We get money in from political subdivisions, that's not necessarily appropriated during the biennium. If that becomes a max, then do we have to remove those people from the plan? Again, I think that's just a wording issue, not an intention of the bill. Well, I'm confident it's not an intention of the bill, but it would just be something to take a look at as we go through that. The next point has to do with the claims period, and let me ask Josh to just speak to that, because as you move this claims period from one 24 months to another 24 months, there's an issue that could arise.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson. Would you please state your name for the record?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Josh Johnson. I'm an employee benefits consultant with Deloitte Consulting. So the topic that Barb just referred to me, essentially what we're dealing with at the highest level here is just medical trend. So over time, we all know that the cost of medical services due to increased utilization and or price of services increases over time. Excuse me. Essentially what we're dealing with here is the July 1 to June 30 biennium sliding forward 6 months. Because of that, from the midpoint of the current biennium to this new biennium, there's a six-month difference. Therefore, the claims will trend forward by 6 months. Based on the most recent projections that Deloitte did for the PERS plan last summer, the average annual trend assumption that we utilized was about 6%. So that was an annual number. Sliding this forward based on that assumption, 6 months would be approximately a 3% increase we would project to the plan just due to trend and the change in the period.
And now, is that explained in your section 4? No, that isn't it there.
Madam Chair, section 3.
Okay.
It's first addressed, and there's actually a chart there that tries to illustrate it visually.
Committee, do you have any questions at this point? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The 3%, what would be that dollar figure?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't know off the top of my head what that would be, but we could very quickly get that for you.
Okay, because that would be what we would have to put in additionally.
Potentially, yeah.
Okay.
Or make plan design changes.
Or make plan, okay.
To account, to offset.
But may I continue?
Please continue.
Are we talking 2 million, 3 million, 20 million? We just don't know.
What's the biennium average claims?
We do have.
Start off the top of your head, sorry.
We do have in here.
Mr. Collins.
If you go to page 4 of the report, if here's the underlying assumptions behind this number. So you know is that in fact the trend stays exactly the same, and we'd end up with a trend deficiency of 3.1%. And what we would need to make that up in terms of appropriation would be this additional authority is what was calculated to make up that plus the other three, I think it was. But the way the bill, now this won't show up in the fiscal note to the bill,
right,
because the way the bill is written is that it says that the fiscal, that the amount appropriated is the amount appropriated, period. So what it means then is the PERS board would have one recourse at that time, which would be to go cut benefits. And we couldn't go to try and fund any deficiency more out of reserves because of the way the appropriation is written. It limits the appropriation. Now, you know, somebody asked me yesterday, you know, is it possible that a new bid could come in lower and it wouldn't be 3%? Yes. I mean, you don't know. But what we do is just take the trend that we know and move it forward for planning purposes.
Representative Snyder.
Madam Chairwoman, and Barb, have you made an attempt to calculate what might be the cost of the impairment of contract issues?
You have your mic on so we can all hear your question, please?
I asked if there'd been an attempt to calculate the cost of dealing with the impairment of contract issues if there was.
No, because first of all, we don't know. I mean, our attorney points out here that there could be an argument made to impairment of contract. Then again, that argument, if it is made, may or may not be successful. And whatever that cost would be based upon whoever is arguing that, what they believe that cost might be. But, you know, it could be equally found. I'm not an attorney, but, I mean, all of this is up to a court. I mean, if it goes to a court. And what's being brought forward in that issue. So I'm sorry, I don't have a number. This is short.
Any further questions at this time? Then please proceed with testimony.
Okay. Then going on to the last page, just touch on some of the last points here. If we did have to go to plan design for these benefit reductions, and if those benefit reductions ended up being the 3 plus the other 3%, 6%, our deductible is one area would have to go up to $1,250 to balance it out. So you can see that it would be a fairly significant change in deductible. The other thing, by moving the period from where it is today to January, what happens is, in January, if things come in higher than expected, you're not here for us to come back to and say, this is what happened. We have had that. I remember one time in the 90s where we went out for bid and we had put in an estimate of what we thought it was, and trends just changed. They got because we put that in the summer before you come in, and things changed and came in higher. And since you were here, we went to the appropriation committees and said, look, it's higher. What do we do? We're going to have to reduce or do or consider high additional premium. And after your consideration at that time, you provided additional premium.
Senator Kilzer.
Madam Chairman and Sparb, what is the deductible now, and is that per person on a family plan, or is it on the whole family?
The deductible right now is $400. It will be going to $500 if the recommendation as submitted by Governor Dalrymple is accepted, because he had included some plan design changes as part of his recommendation, and that would move us from 400 to 500, and then this would move us up to 1200. The deductible amount right now is on a per person, and then there is a maximum per family, and I don't remember what the maximum is. Do you remember, Lisa? Pardon? Oh, it's on the front page. I should have known that. So, yeah, it's right now it's $1,200 per family and $1,500 under what is being proposed. And then when you went up to the 1250, that I don't know has been calculated or not as a maximum. 3750 is what they show. That would be family max. Thank you.
Further questions? Anyone? Are you? You have more testimony?
No.
Okay. And is there anyone else here today to address 1406? If not, we will then close the hearing on 14.
Oh.
You ready to go to the next one?
No, I was just going to, in the first part, just wanted to go over the technical evaluation for you. If it's
Please.
Just general comments away from the technical evaluation, I'd share with you that the PERS board did meet the on Tuesday, and the board reviewed the bill and took a position in opposition to the bill as it is presently written.
That was the entire PERS board?
Yes.
Mr. Collins?
Yeah, they did that on Tuesday. They met
on Tuesday.
So okay. I just wanted to share that with you, separate from the review.
Thank you. Then we will close the hearing on 1406, and we will move into the hearing on 1434. Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deloitte was asked to review the proposed House Bill 1434 and provide any expected actuarial or comment on expected actuarial impact and provide any other technical observations. Does everybody have a copy? Okay, so 1434 would add a section to the Century Code containing health insurance coverage mandates for autism-related services. The expected actuarial impact, so Sanford Health Plan, the plan for PERS, estimated the impact to be approximately $1.88 per contract per month, so per employee, if you will. That equates to approximately 75 cents per member per month or per person. Or 0.15% of the total premium as of July 1. So for the new biennium, it would be approximately 0.15%. The fiscal note provided by PERS estimated the total cost for this for the biennium to be approximately $724,000 based on these assumptions. In discussions with Sanford, their actuaries advised us that they based this cost on similar coverage mandates in other states, and available projected emerging costs cited by a couple different sources. Autism Speaks is an organization that advocates for autism coverage and compiles a lot of data, and also discussions with another actuarial firm, Milliman. Deloitte had readily available some similar information for mandated coverage in the state of Minnesota that's also mentioned in the technical commentary here as a benchmark to this cost estimate provided by Sanford. One of the studies by Autism Speaks provided cost results from eight states that were in the third year of mandates that are similar to what's being proposed in this bill. The average cost for those states ranged from 17 cents per member per month in Illinois to 63 cents per member per month for New Jersey. Further, Milliman provided an estimated the cost for the state of Massachusetts prospectively to be $1 per member per month. So the estimate here, the 75 cents per member per month for the North Dakota plan, falls in line or towards the higher end of that range. For the Minnesota Advantage plan, actually, there are some differences in the coverage that are mandated. At first glance, it looks like that it may be, there may be additional mandates included in the Minnesota statute than what might be required in this North Dakota bill. However, so their costs range from 0.5% of premium to 0.74% for the three plans, which is a little bit higher than what we're projecting here, Sanford's projecting here for the North Dakota plan. On the back of the memo, excuse me, in the short period of time we had to do this review, we did pull together some benchmarking, additional benchmarking information. So other things that come into play with the cost, obviously, is the specifics around what the mandates. So the most costly and most significant class of treatments covered by these bills, autism mandates, is called Applied Behavioral Analysis, or referred to as ABA. Statistics around ABA and mandates were readily available. All states that we looked at or that we found that have mandates, mandate coverage for ABA, most have limits on age limits for the coverage, and also some have visit limits and dollar limits. Underneath here, you'll see a list of several of the states that with newer mandates, I believe it was 2013 or later, and listing their age limitations. For the dollar limits, we weren't able to pull the dollar limits for all the states that we looked at. For the ones that we did look at, there were some that were close to $50,000, which is what's proposed in this bill. Some were lower, so it you know, in a cursory research, it appeared that this $50,000 is towards the higher end of what some other states have mandated as far as the coverage, the benefit limitation. With that, that's the end of my testimony. If you have any questions.
Committee, do you have any questions at this time? Sparb, I'm going to ask that you come up and just run through the bill with us, if you could, very quickly. I have a question on a part of it, so.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, basically the bill just provides in a couple of sections here that, first of all, in section one of the bill, it sets up a process for reporting on this, you know, this is enacted, on reporting on this to the Legislative Management Committee, and also sets up the autism coverage provisions that will be put into place. And this will apply not only to PERS, but it will also apply to other health insurance plans in North Dakota. And Section 1 just goes on to lay out some of the details of what that coverage would be. Section 2 of the bill is what, Section 1 is what applies it to all health insurance plans. Section 2 of the bill is what applies it to the PERS plan. So this goes into place. It would be not only for PERS, but other fully insured plans in the state of North Dakota. And then Section 3 of the bill just clarifies that this is not a mandate. And as you may recall, there is a provision that if a bill is considered a mandated coverage, then it would go into the PERS plan first for 24 months. PERS would report back to you, like we did with the telehealth or telemedicine bill this last time, and then we would be required to submit that to the next session along with those findings that we shared with you, and then it would be considered for all plans. What this is saying is that this is not a mandate, and therefore it wouldn't have to go through that procedure. It would just go directly into all of the plans. And so essentially Section 1 puts it in for all of the plans, Section 2 puts it in for PERS, and Section 3 just says this isn't a mandate, so it doesn't have to go through that other process going forward. And that's kind of an overview of the bill.
Thank you. Questions? I think you've answered some of the question that I had on Section 3, but I think it's rather confusing. In other words, too, that it would be only applicable as a mandate to the PERS plan for 2 years, 24 months. Am I correct?
This bill?
Yes.
As this bill would, this bill waives that. It would be applicable to all plans. It says normally what would occur if it's considered a mandate is it would just go into the PERS plan for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then we'd, like the telehealth, we'd come back to you and report, and then you'd all consider whether you want to make it applicable to everybody. The way the bill, I read the bill right now, is it would become applicable for everybody because it's waiving the mandate provision.
So the wording then that it is not a mandate to me is confusing.
Well, what that does is it says since it's not a mandate, it doesn't have to go through that other process, which would be going into PERS first, because any mandates have to go through PERS. And then from there, then we go through the process, like telehealth, report back to you, and then the next session, you make the decision. Just kind of looking at Jennifer to make sure I captured that correctly. And is that your understanding as well?
Yeah.
Please, if you can clarify things for us, we're welcoming you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, committee members. The provision that this is referring, 54-03-28, is a provision you have in law right now that says if a bill is found by a standing committee to that it is assigned to during session, if that committee finds that it is a health insurance mandate by a majority vote, what that committee does is it requests a cost-benefit analysis. We contract with a consultant to perform that analysis quickly during session. And in this case, this bill has been assigned to House Human Services. And that committee did take a vote on this, and by majority vote found that it was a mandate. They did request the cost-benefit analysis, so that's being conducted right now. They have not received it yet. And my recollection is what that law also says, that is if they find it to be a mandate, when it comes out of committee, it should be amended to reflect that it goes to, like telehealth, it goes to PERS for 2 years. They do an analysis on it, come back 2 years later with a bill that expands it to the full market, and also with a report saying here's what our experience was. There's some discussion about whether legislation can bind the hands of future legislative assemblies. So it's the action of this legislative assembly that dictates. There's the intent that it go through that process, but what you do is what rules the day.
Okay. Any further discussion on this issue? We've got two hands here, Delzer, or Devers first and then Kilzer.
Madam Chair, I think Jennifer answered my question, but on page 2, line 19, it says, a health insurance policy must provide coverage for the screening for. So, you know, you can say it's not a mandate, but that sure sounds like it. The other option, I think, if you don't want it to apply to PERS, is to specifically say that it does not apply. So you can, it's my understanding that you can exclude it from that process. But that kind of an exception should be rare and for more urgent. I remember when we passed that bill that said it applies to PERS for 2 years, it was either in 01 or 03. And I voted against it because of a family that had kids that had PKU and special. And I thought you can't wait 2 years for that. And then I was told that we can make exception to it. So on reconsideration, I voted for it.
Okay, Senator Kilzer.
Madam Chairman and Sparb, does this... what we heard from Mr. Johnson meet the requirements for the cost-benefit analysis, or is there some other procedure in getting the cost-benefit analysis?
Well, basically what Deloitte addressed is just what the cost of the bill is. Underneath what we do is we report back to you is what the cost of the bill is and you know what the bill covers. Thing to that extent. That standing committee does the cost-benefit type of analysis. Now, one of the reasons why that was to be referred, if it's a general mandate, one of the reasons why it was supposed to go to PERS for 2 years before it went into the general coverage was then we would take a look and find out through our actual experience with the bill what happened and report that back. And so our amount here really just shows you what the cost it would be to implement this for PERS, and that's that dollar or couple dollars that Josh went in and pointed to. That would be additional cost on our premiums for the next biennium. And that would either have to be funded through an additional appropriation, or we'd have to go to reserves to pay for that.
And another question, Madam Chairman?
Please continue.
Did the PERS board have a recommendation on this?
No, they didn't, and quite at this point they haven't had an opportunity to review it. This report just came in yesterday. But in the past, on ones that are a mandate, the board generally hasn't taken a position because we wait to see how it goes through the planning process. And that's part of what's required if it's not a mandate, is the board at that point is supposed to come back with a recommendation to you after it's in the plan for a couple of years, after some experience.
Okay, are there further questions? Senator Nelson.
We've been discussing autism-related services for a number of years. My question is quite general. Obviously, this problem existed on April 1st. Why didn't we get it by the deadline?
You raise a very valid point. I'm not too sure myself why. I have not visited with the sponsor, and it's one of those things that it is what it is, and we have to deal with it as we have it. But you raise a very valid point. For the audience, we have a deadline of April 1 for things like this of the previous year. Ah, I see we have the sponsor here.
Chairman.
Welcome, Representative Beadle.
Thank you, Senator Kretzbach. As the sponsor, I thought I could maybe allude to that a little bit.
Please.
So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Thomas Beadle, State Representative, District 27 in Fargo. So this bill came about due to an initiative by parents, by some constituents of mine, who requested it to be drafted towards the end of this past summer. So Senator Nelson, to answer kind of your questions, the whole discussion with them started probably in July, August. They were unaware of any of the timelines involved, requested the bill to be drafted. This language is drafted based off of the language from Autism Speaks. We had a number of discussions over the meantime. Legislative Council drafted this one back in August, and at that time, I know they had approached, I believe, this committee to try to get it on the schedule when you guys met, third or fourth quarter of 16, and then they were told, don't worry about it, or we don't need to go through that at this point. And I think it was just due to the timing of when that schedule was versus when the bill draft came out. Somebody from council could speak more to that. But so we ended up not having it come before here at that time. But it was primarily just due to the timing of when the constituents brought it forward, saying that they wanted to see something like this happen. And in terms of the mandated, not mandate language, the conversation was going about earlier, that language was put in at the request of the constituents I have in the parent groups, kind of in response to the fact that they didn't want to see this wait because there's a number of families that are facing significant issues associated with their autism coverage and with their child and with members of their family. And so they wanted to see this take effect sooner rather than later. And so looking back to last legislative session when we were discussing oral chemo, throughout the assembly, that was another one in which we had bypassed the 2 years mandated PERS process, PERS reviews process. And so since there was precedent to do some of that, then they wanted to go that route instead of having to delay it 2 years. And then part of that was also due to the federal employees plan out of D.C. has just provided some autism coverage effective January 1 of 17. And then in talking with some of the industry groups, the Blues, they indicated that they were going to roll out something January 1 of 2018. So they were already in the process of working on some of this. And so the parents groups that brought this bill forward to me, and I'm sure have contacted all of you because they're like spreading like wildfire on Facebook right now, wanted to make sure that they had something out there that guaranteed that the companies were going to do what they're currently saying they're going to do without having to wait multiple years for that to happen, which is also where the delayed effective date of January 1, 2018 is also kind of in line to help roll that out easily.
Okay. Do you have any questions for Senator Nelson?
I have a question for probably Sparb. And it deals with this two-year delay. So if Human Services in the House has decided that it's a mandate, so it goes to PERS, which means other plans don't have it, but he just said that the Blues might roll it out in January of 2018. Does it preclude them from doing it while that two-year delay?
No. And I can't think of any reason why it would be precluded. This is making the coverage mandated, and maybe somebody from Stanford or from Blue Cross who, as I understand, a health plan can offer any coverages that they desire beyond the minimum amount. And so, if one of the groups wanted to do it without the mandate or in a different form, they could.
Well, Madam Chair.
Please continue, Senator.
Another question then. What would happen if we repealed that mandate of two-year coverage?
If during the session that was done, then it would probably follow the regular process, which would go to PERS. So that would be considered a mandate then at that point, wouldn't it?
So if you repealed the law that we put in 2001 or 3 or whenever it was, it said you had to run it through PERS first before it could go out to the general populace. Is there a reason for us to have that law anymore? Or could we just repeal that and solve a problem?
Oh, I was thinking the section of the law. The law. Yeah. Look, that was kind of a policy decision of the legislature. I mean, first time it's been used, what's happened, interestingly, is when that was put in the statute, there were no mandates, mandated coverages from all that time up until last session or the session with telehealth. Telehealth was the first bill that came in that was a mandated coverage. And now we've had the one that you mentioned earlier and this one that actually went the other way around, so it's not mandated, so it could go quicker. But that's, more policy decision for all of you.
Okay. I'm going to move along with testimony. Is there anyone else here today that would like to testify on 1434? Good morning.
Morning.
Would you please state your name for the record?
Yes, my name is Beth Malk, and I am a parent of a six-year-old autistic boy in North Dakota, and I will hand out my testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, so good morning. I am one of those parents that Thomas was talking about earlier, who, from my naivete, maybe didn't realize all the deadlines and the processes and procedures that, the legislature and all of you put forth. So I am part of a grassroots effort here in North Dakota called North Dakotans for Autism Insurance Reform. And I know today's meeting is mostly, you're here to discuss the fiscal impact of the bill. And it's about numbers and it's about cost. But I wanted to respectively stand up here in front of you today to point out that what's behind those numbers and what you're really talking about here. So if you want to take a look at that tag board right there, that's just a sampling of the kids, of those parents that are part of this effort. And obviously we have 400 and almost 500 members right now who have kids. And so please put your eyes on that tag board right there. And you know, we're talking about the vulnerable children of this state who are not receiving medically necessary care that their doctors are prescribing. One of the most prescribed evidence-based treatments is that applied behavioral analysis, along with, of course, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapies. And so I just kind of wanted to take you down a journey today. You know, just imagine for a minute that your son or your daughter or your best friend comes to you and they tell you their son was or daughter was diagnosed with autism and that they were prescribed a therapy that could significantly improve the quality of their life or how independent they're going to become, whether or not they're going to be a taxpayer or not. And so the next thing they tell you is, well, that prescription that I got, I can't get it in North Dakota because I don't have coverage and no insurance company offers the coverage. And so then they tell you they're going to move. They're going to move away from all their friends, all their family, and they're going to leave behind a promising career here in this state. And mind you, we often talk about, you know, growing the young population of this state. Now I want you to be, imagine what you're going to say to that person. Are you going to say to that person, I could have helped you. I could have helped you, but I didn't. Or are you going to be the person who says, I helped prevent that scenario from happening to all other North Dakota families? So I want you then to think, if you didn't support, what are you going to say to that person and how are they going to react to you? What do you think their reaction is going to be? Are they going to give you a high five? Are they going to say, good job? Probably not. So again, yes, today is about processes and procedures and numbers, and that matters. But kids on that board matter a little more. They do. So please, as you make your recommendation today, take one final look at that TEG board and imagine you talking to those parents, those best friends, those sons, those daughters, those grandchildren that you might have, and think about that. And so I just wanted to kind of, you know, put an image, and a lot of times autistic kids need images, and so as us as adults sitting here today, we need those images too. So just, you know, take a look, one more look before you make your decision. And anyway, that's kind of what I wanted to say today and point out. So I do thank you for your time this morning. I really appreciate it, and I hope you move forward. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in and testifying. Is there further testimony from in the group here this morning? Representative Kreit. I think, Beth, you have a question here from one of our representatives. Could you please come to the podium to respond?
Thank you for coming back up. Madam Chairman, I have a question, and I don't know if you can answer it or Representative Beadle. He's quote, the main sponsor of the bill, but the age 26 that you're recommending, can you tell me why you choose 26? Or because going through, I don't see any other states that go that, you know, that high with the age of the child. 26 isn't a child anymore, but could you?
Yeah, right. So we did base it off of model legislation from Autism Speaks, and based on recommendations, and again, this is my naivete, but based on recommendations from lobbyists from organizations such as that, that's what they recommended, and so that's what we moved forward with.
Okay, so just kind of pick that number out, in other words.
Well, you know, and we say...
Or did you base it on possibly, you know, other insurance plans allow, you know, family members up to 26 to stay in a policy? Is that kind of where you base it
right.
off?
Right, yep.
Okay.
So. Right.
Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Beadle, I think, has a remark on that as well.
Thank you, Senator Kresbach and Representative Kreit. I can address that a little more as well. And I forgot to bring it with me today, but I do have a chart showing the breakdown of all of the states that kind of do have age limits within there. There is some flexibility within there. Some are as low as 11. Some are up into the early 20s. 26 was just thrown out there, and I think in part because when you look towards ACA, Affordable Care Act, and everything else that we had going on, they had the 26 coverage for the children being on the parents' plan and everything. So I think that's partly where that number originated from. But I know, in talking with what's happened in other states, 21 and 18 to 21 seems to be the most common number. And I know in conversations, the bill is drafted based on model language. And in conversations with the Blues and some others, we are open to amending it throughout this process as it goes on. So that number today doesn't mean that's going to be the number next week.
Thank you. Senator Cook-Pullman.
Madam Chairman and Representative Beadle, do you have any evidence that shows that beyond the age of 14, that ABA is medically necessary and effective for
Senator Krebs,
for young adults?
And Senator Pullman, I don't, but that language was put in there at the request of Autism Speaks because they say they do. And so I will leave that up for them to prove. Because I don't know. I'm presented the language in accordance with them. I do know that throughout, you know, it's absolutely most effective at early and adolescent ages. By far, it's the most effective, and then it's got a long tail after that, where it's moderate effects, but it still can have some in terms of the ABA therapy. But it is absolutely the most beneficial early on, and that's where the bulk of the costs associated with it are.
As a parent of an autistic child, I am concerned that this bill as written will do more harm than good, especially when I hear that the federal programs and Blue Cross Blue Shield within a year will cover medically necessary therapy. And when we talk about what's evidence-based and we take a look at early intensive behavioral intervention, that's what we know is working. We know that that costs between $80,000 and $200,000 a year, and we are going to put a requirement that everybody pays for everything up to the age of 26 to $50,000, and I am very concerned that that is going to be sacrificing what we know works in those young years, very intensive and very expensive. What would be your response to that?
Well, and Senator Krebs and Senator Pullman, you know, by no means do we want to sacrifice care. And in conversation with the Blues in particular, as this process goes along, and I reference them because I know them better, in conversation with them as we go on, our intention is not to overcomplicate everything and make it so that we would jeopardize what they were planning on rolling out to begin with. The goal is that some families, I mean, getting a $50,000 limit on there, I mean, that's more than they've ever gotten. So for some families, that's going to make a tremendous difference and an absolutely phenomenal impact in their lives and their family lives. I know speaking, my cousin has autism, and so they've been dealing with this up in the Cavalier area, and just their ability to get treatment and services in that part of the state has been absolutely unreal. And just last weekend, she texted me saying that they were looking at moving off the farm and moving down to West Fargo just because of the benefits that are available in the West Fargo School District and in that community are going to help their child out significantly. So that cap and that limit in there is not intended to sacrifice care because we know it can be very expensive, especially when you're in more of the special needs cases. But we also know that with the early intervention, you're going to bring down the cost long term and everything else. So that's why we wanted to make sure that the ABA and some of those other things were covered. That cap number was put in there again by Autism Speaks. But if we, as we go through this process, end up wanting to look to make the language a lot more general, so that we, you know, make sure that we have the coverage in there. Say it needs the insurance policies must cover ABA therapy or you know, cover some of these certain treatments, but we don't put the limitations in there. So we give the plans flexibility to work. I'm amenable to that.
Okay. Any further questions from the committee for Mr. Beadle? Representative Beadle, excuse me.
That's whatever. Can't get hung up on titles too much.
No, we don't. We don't at this point. We want to get information today.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I do have a question for providers. If this were to be passed, are there services available to take care of the needs that are being required in this bill in North Dakota? and maybe you don't have the answers for me. Well, it seems to me that you're dealing with special situations with autism. And do we have the adequate people to provide the services that are necessary? I mean, where are people getting the services today?
Senator Krebsbach and members of the committee, my name is Eric Munson. I'm the CEO of the Ann Carlson Center.
Thank you for coming.
And we do provide significant number of services for children and adults on the spectrum. The question of if we had an insurance mandate or if we had coverage, even if we accomplished this through without a mandate, the question of how quickly we could absorb the number of individuals that would be eligible for services and would be medical necessary would depend a little bit on some numbers that I don't have, which is how many, let's take children as an example, under the age of 14. I don't know how many are currently receiving services totally. I know what our numbers are. And I don't know how many individuals seek services outside of the state or have moved outside of the state, or in some circumstances that I'm aware of, one parent of, as my children refer to, parental units, one part of that parental unit lives elsewhere to obtain services, and the rest of the family, excuse me, remains in North Dakota. So could we absorb immediately additional? Yes, we have been recruiting so that we're able to absorb additional individuals. I don't know, however, what that number would be that we would need to match up. We're not the only provider of services for children on the spectrum or adults, and I think, but I think we do belong to a coalition of those individuals, organizations, and we could probably figure that out.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Munson as long as he's here? Thank you. Then we will take one more testimony person for today. We have one more bill to consider, and we've got a deadline. And please, if any of you have any information for us, provide it to us written, if you would.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirsten Dvorak, and just to make it sweet and short, I'm the Executive Director of the Ark of Bismarck, and today I'm here to represent the North Dakota Autism Spectrum Disorders Advocacy Coalition. And a side note, that's not in my testimony. I'm also the daughter of a 17-year-old who is on the spectrum. So formally, we formed in 2013. The coalition members were initially at odds over any array of proposed autism-related services. Advocates came together to attempt to agreement on the best approaches for people with autism spectrum disorders. We found that collectively, we had much more in common than we had anticipated. Through a series of consensus-based decision-making meetings, the organizations comprising the coalition have reached agreement on key program elements on autism spectrum disorder services for the people of North Dakota. The coalition meets monthly and follow our mission, which you guys can all read, but in short, the coalition supports 1434 and recognize the importance of the insurance coverage in accessing the services needed by people on the autism spectrum. As one of only few states without such coverage, the issue of priority for the coalition for the people of North Dakota. We look forward to working with the committee assigned to further hear this legislation, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your message here.
Yes.
Any questions of Mr. Dvorak? Thank you.
Thank you.
Committee, we will then close the hearing on House Bill 1434, and we will move into testimony on 1403. Good morning again, Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Proposed House Bill 1434 would create a new chapter to the Century Code mandating for health insurance benefits contracts that use a pharmacy benefits manager, or a PBM. The insurance contract between the insurer and the PBM must be disclosed to the PERS board. Further, all invoices containing the correspond must contain detailed pharmacy claims data provided to the board. Clinical and utilization management programs must be disclosed prior to implementation. It also covers audit rights and the ability to select an auditor and conduct annual audits of the PBM.
You have copies of your testimony for us.
Sorry. While those are going around, I can summarize what we were asked, Deloitte was asked to do. We had one of our pharmacy experts review the provisions in the bill. As a result, he didn't have any concerns per se. So what this memo shows is goes down the list of the separate provisions within the bill, technical components and requirements with the PBM contract, and provides some commentary to certain sections that could clarify certain things that were he viewed as ambiguous. Or not clear, if you will. So no real concerns, just really some potential recommended changes in wording, if you will. So once you have a chance to look at that, I'd be happy to respond to certain sections, or I could walk through them, or whatever you need.
Committee, do you have any questions regarding the testimony? I know we haven't had much time to review it, but are any questions in regard to the bill in itself?
Madam Chair?
Senator Nelson.
Has the PERS board acted on this bill?
I think Mr. Collins is going to answer that.
Yes, the PERS board did get an opportunity to take a look at the bill on Thursday, and the board took a neutral position on the bill. They did have one other suggestion that we're share with the sponsor on the bill, which is to maybe make it a preference criteria rather than a mandatory criteria. We agree that that information is good, it's helpful, it's good to have for managing. By making it a preference criteria, what happens is, as part of the overall bid, it can be weighed. For example, if we end up going to a bid, and we end up with two carriers coming back, make it a little more dramatic than it probably would be, but one is 6% lower than the other, but the one that is lower won't agree to the PBM terms, and the one that is higher will agree with the PBM terms. By having it as a preference criteria, then we could say, well, because of the weight of this differential in pricing, we'll end up going there. But as a preference criteria too, it says that if they both come in the same price or very close to the price, then what we need to do is give the one that will agree to those terms the preference. And so I'm just citing that by making a preference, it gives a little more discretion to have it viewed within the overall bid process versus having it be a mandatory situation. We'll share that with the sponsor, but other than that, the board's neutral. I mean, this is PBM or price. Prescription drugs are a real challenge in the future.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, do you have anything further to add for the benefit of the committee?
Madam Chair, I do not.
Okay. Is there anyone else here today to testify on House Bill 1403? If not, we will close the hearing on 1403. Committee, we have a decision to make as to whether to take jurisdiction of these bills. So at this time, I would entertain that discussion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pullman.
When we take a look at the autism bill, there are still a lot of unanswered questions for me. I mean, we haven't even heard from the insurers in the state to find out who's covering what and who isn't and why we're in a place where parents are feeling this way. Is there, I mean, this is sort of the disadvantage in that they didn't go through the deadline. That bill should have had a full morning. I mean, we could have had quite a bit of time with both providers and insurers and parents, and so yeah. Is there a way we can come back another day? I would really like to talk to the insurance providers.
Senator Pullman, you bring up some very good points that are questioning in my mind, but our position at this time is whether it affects the insurance of the state and the PERS programs. So do we want to take jurisdiction on these? And I think what we will have to do is schedule another meeting, give us time to mull these three bills over and find out answers, perhaps even get some of the people to testify to us. But I think right now we have the duty to take jurisdiction or not take jurisdiction on the bills.
Madam Chair, I would make a motion then. I would move that we take jurisdiction over these bills so we can research them further.
Okay, we have a motion for taking jurisdiction on the three bills we heard, 1406, 1434, and 1403. Is there a second?
Second.
We have 2 seconds. So with that, committee.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dever.
I believe all three bills have already been heard. If we take jurisdiction, they're already under the jurisdiction of the committees that heard them. I'm not sure quite how that works.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but...
Or if our jurisdiction is only for the purpose of taking a position on the bills.
I think so. It's for the purpose of taking a position and then giving it one of the three recommendations which we are obligated to do.
Madam Chair.
Senator Boehning, Representative Boehning.
1434, has that been heard in full committee yet?
I don't know.
You know, Madam Chair, I know one time there was some talk about some amendments to this bill. We've got a new fiscal note that come from $6.30 per policy, and now it's down to 80 cents. I think this bill needs to go to full committee hearing before we even take a position on this bill. So I think, isn't it normally that the bill gets heard in full committee? If it comes out with a recommendation as it do pass, and would come to us?
No. Normally, this bill would have been introduced to the Employee Benefits Committee last spring. And but we make a determination, and give, it doesn't mean it still can go to the committee, and they make their own decision on it. They can amend it. They can do whatever.
And then it would have to come back to us if they come with
no,
a favorable recommendation?
No, it does not come back to this committee. It just goes from one floor to the next floor.
And then appropriations be involved, too.
So is there any more discussion on the motion to take jurisdiction? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Does that have to be a voice vote? A vote? Okay, sorry, we're going to roll call that vote. So, Anna, would you please roll call that, Alec?
Yes. Senators, Chairman Krausbach.
Aye.
Dever.
Aye.
Kilzer.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Oban.
Yes.
Pullman.
Aye.
Representatives Kreit.
Yes.
Anderson. Boehning.
Yes.
Doctor.
Yes.
Gugisberg. Lanning.
Yes.
Schneider.
Aye.
Madam Chair, motion carries.
Okay. Committee, with that, what we will do is recess for now, and we will be calling a meeting We'll try and do it within the next day. Today is what? Thursday? Oh, yeah, okay. We'll get it done before Friday, before we go home. So be prepared to stay a little longer tomorrow if you have to, so we can get this completed. Thank you very much, and we'll see you later.
Thank you.
Because we were wondering where you guys were, and then I forgot you're in this committee too. Yeah, we burned. We had the treasurer's bill at 8 o'clock. We had the treasurer's bill at 8. We had GPS. Well, if I didn't go to that one, I'll tell Mark, we was over at 4.
Test.
We will reconvene the Committee on Employee Benefits and move into the agenda for today, and that is comments by me. It's a great agenda. My comments are extremely short. I hope you've all had time to do some more research on the three bills that we have had, or that we have in front of us, that we have to take action on. And with that, we will move into the first bill, 1403. Any comments on 1403? That's one relating to public health benefits transparency and the PBMs, correct?
Madam Chairman.
Representative Kreit.
I've taken a little bit of time to go through 1403 since we met on whatever day, 26th, and we're not sure if it's a mandate or if it isn't, and if it is a mandate, I do not feel that that's something we want to get into. I don't, you know, I'm not a mandate person, so if you're looking for a motion, I would move it. That's 1434.
Yeah.
Excuse me. That's the one I want.
Okay.
Can we talk about that one?
Well, I was going to take them in
the
order.
Hold up
if you would hold, please, and we'll just take them in order here as they are. 1403. They're free to utilize a PBM at this time, are they not?
Madam Chair, I guess I'm not sure on that.
Mr. Collins, could you tell us?
Is this working?
Yes, it is.
Madam Chair, yes, PERS does use can use a PBM. Now, what this bill would do is just prescribe a couple of other things that we should get when we enter in or our carrier enters into a PBM contract. So it's just asking for us to add a couple of things in, which would provide more information about what the PBM is doing and charging.
Are you able to do that without this bill?
It's always hard to get information from PBMs. It's very it's a very different kind of marketplace. I'm not sure if we could or we couldn't.
Okay. Further questions or discussion on 1403? Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, I have written on my here that this got a neutral from the PERS board, is that right? And if so, why? What was their reasoning?
The board feels that this is an area of challenge and there's merit here. However, we did have some observations that our consultant had for suggestions on the bill, and the board had one other suggestion as well, and so that's why the neutral recommendation, so that there be an opportunity for these other items to be considered in the legislative process as it goes through, and see how those all get amended into it or not.
Okay, committee, we have it here in front of us. Are there any wishes?
Since we seem to be pretty neutral on the bill as far as the PERS board is concerned, I would move that we give House Bill 1403 no recommendation. Can we do that?
We have a motion for no recommendation. Is there a second? The motion made by Senator Pullman, seconded by Senator Nelson. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Well, Madam Chairman, I guess I don't understand. Is this a big problem that the information is being withheld by the benefit manager? I don't quite understand that. Why we need the bill? Is there information that is being withheld, I guess? Could I ask Barb that, or?
Sure. Mr. Collins, could you
respond
to the question?
And I don't know if he would know or not, but.
PERS does not presently, as a fully insured plan, we do not contract directly with the carrier, with the PBM. We contract directly with the carrier. So at this point, we have not negotiated a contract with a PBM.
But are there other political subdivisions or some other units that do contract with PBMs?
There probably is, but this bill would only apply to PERS. And if we did, it would be asking us to have our carrier include that in the contract, and if we did a contract, having us include that in the contract.
Okay.
Okay, we do have a motion on the floor. Is there any further discussion on that motion? If not, would you please call the roll for the motion to give this bill no recommendation?
Senators, Chairman Kresbach.
No.
Dever.
Yes.
Kilzer.
Aye.
Nelson.
Yes.
Obam.
Yes.
Pullman.
Yes.
Representatives, Kreit.
Yeah.
Anderson. Boehning.
Yes.
Doctor.
Yes.
Gugisberg. Lanning.
Yes.
Schneider. Madam Chair, motion carries.
Okay. That will then go out of the committee with no recommendation. The next bill we will consider.
Hold on,
Pardon me? 1, 2, 3, 4.
9-1.
9-1. The next bill would be bill number 1406. And that is the bill that would change the date of the contract to January 1st. And it must be for 2 years.
Madam Chairman, I'd give this one a favorable recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for favorable recommendation. Any discussion on that?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dever.
Madam Chair, there are some similarities with this in 1407, which this committee previously gave an unfavorable recommendation to, and I think for some good reason. This one is different in that it changes the contract date to January 1st, and then in subsection 2 of section 1 says that it has to be consistent with the appropriation from the previous session. So in essence, what it would do is the contract would start next January 1st based on whatever amount we appropriate now, and the design of the plan then would be subject to the amount of money that the legislature appropriated. Seems to me that in the past we've had control over any design changes in the insurance plan policy, and I think that would put that responsibility on the PERS board to change copays and deductibles and all that kind of thing. It would be nice if we could dictate to the insurance companies what we're willing to pay, but I think it's complicated, so I'm going to oppose the motion.
Any other comments? Hearing none, let's have the clerk call the roll on the favorable recommendation for 1406.
Senators Sherman Kresbach.
No.
Dever.
No.
Hilder.
No.
Nelson. Hoban.
No.
Pullman.
No.
Representatives Kreit.
Yes.
Anderson. Boehning.
Yes.
Doctor.
Yes.
Gugisberg. Lanning.
Yes.
Schneider. Madam Chair, motion fails. 6-4.
6-4.
Madam Chair.
Senator Oban.
I would move an unfavorable recommendation on House Bill 1406.
Second.
We have a motion for unfavorable on 1406. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, has this bill been heard in committee as of yet or not?
I don't know, and that really isn't our responsibility.
Well, I guess the only question I'm asking on that is, if they did have a hearing, I mean, what was their recommendation, and you know, I mean, what their thoughts were, and I kind of were. We're giving them a recommendation, and I don't know if this bill has been heard yet in their committee either, so I'm trying to, or what their thoughts was.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pullman.
I just think we should remind the committee that the whole point of this committee is that it's supposed to go here before it gets a hearing. And so I'm not really interested in what's going on in any hearing that is taking place prior to our work here. So that I just think we're supposed to give the recommendation first, and then the committee takes that under consideration as a part of their hearing. It's just a suggestion we give, really, right? I mean, it really, they can do what they want once we've given that recommendation. Nothing, you know, we don't take away their birthday or anything. It just says
just
we don't like it.
Our responsibility is to recommend it as to how we see it affecting the PERS program and the health insurance. Is there any further discussion? Would the clerk please call roll for the unfavorable recommendation on 1406?
Senators Sherman Kresbach.
Aye.
Dever.
Yes.
Hilder.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Hoban.
Yes.
Pullman. Representatives Kreit.
Oh.
Banning.
No.
Doctor.
No.
Lanning.
Yes.
Madam Chair, motion carries.
Okay. That takes care of that bill. Then let's move into 1434. And that is the autism bill. Autism-related services for health insurance.
Madam Chairman, I give a little...
Representative Kreit.
I give a little spiel in the beginning here. Got ahead of myself.
Would you repeat that spiel, please?
My brain was ahead of my mouth, which happens periodically. I give this one an unfavorable recommendation after further review since our last meeting.
We have a motion for unfavorable on 1434. Is there a second? Okay, Representative Kreit moved and Senator Kilzer seconded. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Boehning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to, this I think got heard in committee today, I do believe. I know I'm going to get chastised for it, but but I guess the question is, are we going to see the bill once it comes out of their committee? Are we going to give them a recommendation and then they do what they want with it? And then if they amend the bill, we won't see it again then? Is that how this process is going to work? I guess I'm kind of want a clarification on how this is going
to The recommendation from this committee has got to be attached to the bill before it leaves. Well, it should have been done before it went to committee. But now it'll be whenever it's available. Adam, would you, or Alec, would you like to respond, please?
Madam Chair, that's correct. And if there are significant amendments, the chairman believes would affect the bill, she would call the committee back to order, and the committee would take another look at that bill to see if that would change their opinion, and they'd also possibly request another actuarial report.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. Committee, do you have any further discussion or questions on the motion before we vote? Hearing, seeing none, would you please? Sparb has something to say. We welcome you, Sparb.
Thank you. Just a comment. The hearing on that is going on now. Someone from my staff is down there. We are just updating the committee on the fiscal note to the bill. There won't be a fiscal cost to PERS in the first 2 years because the bill as written wouldn't become effective for PERS until the next biennium as written, which would be the 1921 biennium as it's written right now. So just want to, that's being shared with them now. So just want to pass that along too.
So there is time in this biennium to come forward with a different bill that perhaps would meet more of the approval.
Madam Chairman, did we resolve whether this is a mandate or it's not a mandate?
Frankly, I can't tell you myself, but anybody here smarter than me that can give us an answer.
Madam Chair, I won't claim to be smarter than you, but I will say, so the House Human Services Committee did deem this bill to be a mandate, and they requested an actuarial report also on the bill. There is current law that requires mandates to go through PERS for 2 years before they get applied to all other insurance companies. However, the legislature can overrule that law if it so chooses.
That's the reason for the wording on the back then, is it?
I believe so.
Section 3, yeah.
Madam Chair.
Senator Kreit.
It would be my understanding that if the legislature wanted to bypass the PERS provision, that they would have to say specifically that in the bill. What we see on here that says is not a mandate is legislative intent.
Yes, you're right.
On page 2, line 19, it says a health insurance policy must provide coverage. I don't see how that can be considered to not be a mandate.
Madam Chairman, can I ask Barb
Representative
one question?
Representative, yes.
Barb, now, being or not, it's not going to apply to PERS. Is it going to apply to the general insurers of the state then? Or what's, if it's not applying to PERS for the first 2 years, what's it doing to the rest then?
What that's based upon is more recent conversations with our attorney. As the bill, as we interpret the bill, that provision that says it is not a mandate means then that it would become effective for contracts after the effective date of the bill, which is August of this year. We do not negotiate a new contract now. I mean, our contract will be done by July 1 because July 1 is when the new contract takes place. So we won't be negotiating a new contract until 2 years down the road, and that's when it would become effective for us. Now, if the bill said it didn't have that provision and it said this is not a mandate, or, you know, if it didn't do that, and it was a mandate, then it would come under the sections of the statute that are already there that say that would become effective for PERS right away. And so what would probably happen is things are reversed. If this was mandated, become effective for PERS right away, for everybody else 2 years down the road. If it's not a mandate, it becomes effective for everybody else after the with their contract starting on or after August 1. And for us, our first contract after that date would be in July 2019.
Madam Chair, then SPAR, this will go into effect for the rest of the insurers in the state after the bill is passed and whenever they redo their plans.
That's my understanding.
Okay, that's what I wanted to find out, because I know I didn't know that amendment was out there. I know there was some tweaks on age and so forth, so I just kind of.
And if they do take out that it's not a mandate, I mean, they're treating it as a mandate, but I don't know that phrase has been amended out of the bill. If that phrase is amended out of the bill, then we'll be revising our fiscal note again to have fiscal impact right away.
Okay, and there was not a mandate, but I guess there was a mandate for you to have an actuarial study on the cost. And am I to understand that you said there was no actuarial impact in this coming biennium, or in the 17 to 19 biennium?
If it doesn't take effect for PERS until the next biennium, there is an actuarial cost to it. It's just a matter of when it becomes part of our plan design. If it became part of our plan design right away, then there would be an impact. And that was a dollar or some cents per contract per month. You'll hear a couple of numbers going around. There's per contract per month, and then there's per member per month.
Yeah.
And the difference between that is we have 68,000 members, and we have 28,000 contracts. So contract amount's always going to be higher than the per member, just because we got about three people to a little less than three per contract.
Okay. Committee, do you have sufficient information, or do you want more? Would the clerk please call roll for the unfavorable recommendation on 1434?
Senators, Chairman Kresbach.
Aye.
Dever.
Aye.
Kilzer.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Oban.
Yes.
Pullman.
Yes.
Representatives, Kreit.
Yes.
Boehning.
No.
Doctor. Laning.
Yes.
Madam Chair, motion carries.
Committee, that concludes the work of this committee for now. So without any further discussion or anything, we are adjourned. That's why I said for now. We'll probably be back.
Right. Sounds like.
You never know.
You never know.
Depends on how much pressure we can take.
Oh,